The topic of Moed Sfitim is a particularly important topic to speak about. It might be, actually, there are those who argue that it could be the Iker Shabbos HaGadol Drasha topic, because the Shulchan Aruch, you saw in Tav Chav Tes, the Shulchan Aruch says that Shol and Adorshin Behilchos HaPesach, Lama Yom Kodom HaChag, and the Rama over there has his comment that there's a minig to Bikone Chitim, to give to people. So what exactly is the significance of putting that halacha right there? Which is a question that some ask, although you could say, listen, he's got to put it somewhere. You know, the Rama, his whole nature of his style of his sefer is that he attaches himself to comments on the Mechaber. So the Mechaber, he has got to have some Mechaber to work off of. So it could simply be that this is the closest, most appropriate statement. But nonetheless, there is the assumption that maybe there is a significance to the attachment here. Shulchan Aruch saying Sholon Adarshan, and the Rama adding Minig Liknos Chitim. So there are those who suggest, the Mayor of Premishlan, for example, that he's explaining what the Shulchan Aruch says, that when we say that we should be Shol Udorish and Holchos HaPesach, it means that this is the kind of thing we should be talking about. That the Rama is telling us this is an important topic to discuss, to talk about taking care of the aniyim. So that statement that the Rama puts here, so where does he get it from? So if he saw from the Makoros, so he gets it from the Or Zaruah. And the Or Zaruah gets it from where? From the Yerushalmi. Right, the Yerushalmi in Bava Basra has a statement, the first parak of Bava Basra, which is a location which is probably significant, as we've seen throughout this month. The Yerushalmi there says, Yud Beis Chodesh L'chitei de Pesach, Bein Lisa Bein Liten. So the Yud Beis Chodesh, 12 months, that's the standard for Chitim of Pesach. Bein Lisa Bein Liten, meaning that if you're a giver or a receiver, either way, 12 months is the standard. If you've lived in a town for 12 months, you're obligated to give, and if you have lived in a town for 12 months, you're eligible to receive. So if that's the case, so you have to figure out exactly why the Rama has the language of minig. It seems like it's a halacha. So we've been seeing throughout the Zman that these are obligations that are so severe that we may even be able to apply kfiya to them. So why do you have the language of minig in the Rama? So one sefer that suggested, it's a joke that's often repeated in many different contexts. You know, you've heard those who say that if the Mishnah Berurah had said that yesh nogim lo ligzol, people be much more makbid on gzela. That people take menhagim much more seriously than actual halacha. It tells stories about the Shagas Aryeh and many other gedolim. It's one of these kind of rotating generic stories that when he was appointed the rav of a community, he was told that he should record a minig in their book, because they have a minig book, and the policy was the new rabbi always puts a minig in the book. So he wrote the Aseres HaDibros in the book, and they said, you know, that's already the Aseres HaDibros. He said, yeah, but now people will take it seriously. You know, that there is an idea that, so there are those who said, presumably not so seriously, but the point's well taken nonetheless, that yeah, there's a halacha of tzedakah, but if the Rama tells you it's a minig, so now all of a sudden it will become much more important. One could make a separate discussion about Hilchos Pesach and the role of minig and the role of Ikar Hadin, and probably have many interesting observations. But in any event, the question is a good one. If this really is a din, so why does the Rama write it as a minig? So the Mishnah Berurah addresses this, if you've got a chance to see it. Right? The Mishnah Berurah says that it's because of what he is focusing on, which is a little bit hard for us to relate to because we've reverted back to what the Gemara talks about. What am I talking about? The question is, are you giving cash or are you giving something else? So we nowadays, for most chitim, generally give cash. The Yerushalmi was presumably also talking about cash. What the Rama's minig is about is that there was at least one phase in history where the assumption was if you give people grains, so then that would help them more. As the Mishnah Berurah says, that the Makarva Hanaisa, that we want to make the Hana more accessible, we want to make the benefit more accessible. So if they have grains, so that's one step closer to having matzah. And here you get into a whole historical discussion of how things were done. You know, once upon a time, people baked their own matzah. That was the common practice. Everybody baked their own matzah. So providing for people didn't mean giving them matzah. It meant giving them the ingredients for matzah. So grains would cost money, and matzah process would be something you do yourself. So if you want to help out the aniyim, so the most efficient way to do it would be to give them grains itself that they could then turn into flour and then bake into matzah. So nowadays, people don't bake their own matzah so much. So nowadays, it's more helpful just to give cash so they can go to the Passover store and buy matzah, because there are Passover stores, but there are not people who know how to bake their own matzahs. So it depends where you are in history as to what is the method that's going to be most efficient as far as providing for people's matzah needs. So at the time when the Rama and the Urza were writing, so providing chitim was the way that made the most sense. So the minig that he's talking about maybe is referring to that.
Hi. So why did they go one step further and say you give flour, for instance?
So flour is also something you can make yourself. You just take the grains and you grind it up. So here are we helping the most. So the grains themselves, that's what costs money in their tkufa, and that which they may not be able to obtain. So this is the most efficient way to be helpful. We're not saying you necessarily have to do the physical labor for them, but save them the step of having to go shopping for the grain, so that's something that makes a little more sense.
Right. So you're saying essentially that it was mainly to buy the grains that the aniyim might not be able to afford?
Well, the idea seems to be matzah focused,
right?
So we're all here trying to help with the matzah. So what's going to do it? So you could give them cash to buy matzah, or you go a step further if you actually give them the matzah itself, so then that's even more helpful. Now, in those days, most people didn't get matzah given to them. And the rich people didn't go to stores and buy matzah. Everyone make their own matzah. So then what is it that people needed? People needed grains. So if you gave them cash, they could buy grains. But that's a schlep, or that's difficult. Who knows what will happen? So if you give them the grains, so that's the step that makes the most sense as far as a focus on both efficiency and getting what we need.
That's also why you wouldn't give them flour, because you needed to have the grains from the time of...
So that's also a good question, how that factors in. We'll see in terms of the shmurah component, when the shmurah comes from, what stage the shmurah comes from. So we'll have to see how that fits in if we have time. But what also could just be that they can make the flour themselves. So it's not so much about saving them labor, it's about the step of having to figure out where the grains can be bought and who they could buy it from. So it's more efficient in general to give the actual resource than to give cash, which has to turn into the resource. The question is at what point in the process. So since if they could relatively easily turn the grains into flour, there's no point in saving them that step. But in terms of turning the cash into grains, that might be a little bit more of a challenge. So if you can provide the grains themselves, so then that's saving a step in the process. And then at different points in history, flour made more sense. And then at other points, matzah itself might make more sense. There are different points in history as far as what's going to be the most efficient way of doing this, and that seems to be the minute component that the Rama and the Urza Ruah are focusing on. So while we're mentioning that, Mishnah Berurah also talks about, so what is the shear? How much do you have to give? So he says you should give in order to provide for matzah for the entire time, for the entire Pesach. It's not the time to get into the conversation about the mitzvah of matzah, where the mitzvah is only the first night, like we assume, the first two nights, that there is, practically speaking, a chiyuv to eat matzah. But we need matzah for the rest of the days also, because there's no kosher bread. And in addition, we have the position of the Vilna Gaon, if that's relevant here, that there is a mitzvah kiyumis in eating matzah all week long. But you don't even have to come on to that, but the matzah is what there is to eat, so you need to provide matzah for the entire time. And he says also, if the practicalities are that he doesn't know how to bake it himself, and he's going to need to get somebody else involved in baking it, or he doesn't have any access to any ovens, or whatever it is, so it's going to cost him money to get it baked, or he's going to have some kind of difficulty in getting the grains baked into matzahs, then you have to help with that too. So then, yeah, that's also included in what Mo's Chita means. So There is much discussion, especially in light of what we have discussed, that if there is a principle, as we know, we spent a lot of time here on, of de machsoro, so there are many who raise the question, why do we need this halacha in Hilchos Pesach? So we already know that we're obligated to provide for the ani based on what his needs are. So Pesach, we're certainly aware that the needs become a little bit more focused and more expensive. Right. So, what's the question, sir?
I think it's the same idea on Matanos Levionim, like this time of year you should give money also.
So maybe we'll compare it to Matanos Levionim in a second to see exactly what the commonalities are. But on the surface, one could say that this doesn't have to be in Hilchos Pesach, that this should be in Hilchos Tzavka, which is in Yeridaya. That we already have a halacha of De Machsoro. So let Maos Chitim be mentioned there. Let it simply be an outgrowth of the idea of De Machsoro, that this is a need that doesn't apply the rest of the year. So we understand that when the Ani who comes to you all year round and says, I have needs, and he comes to you in Nisan, so you understand that the needs are a little more intense, and you'll respond accordingly. So the Chidah, in his Sefer Machzik Bracha, he quotes a idea from an earlier sefer called Avodas HaGefen, that this is perhaps comparable to what we saw when we talked about Shalach Manas. Again, keep an eye out for synergies here. That maybe the takana was that we were worried that people would not necessarily be willing to take from tzedakah for the purposes of matzah. And people who need matzah, who don't take from tzedakah all year round, will not have any way to get it because they're not willing to take from tzedakah. So there had to be a special institution within the concept of Hilchos Pesach so that those will be accommodated as well. But there is another approach to take to this. And this approach, it's interesting, so I think we mentioned in the past the Sefer Rav Yaakov Betzalel Zsolnay, the Mishnas Yavetz. Again, when I was your age, this was a very popular sefer. It doesn't always get talked about as much nowadays, but it was a very hot sefer when I was in yeshiva, and it was hard to get. It got sold out, and then nowadays it's available on HebrewBooks.org, so it doesn't get sold out anymore. So the sefer is popular in general, but it's interesting that this piece is very widely quoted. The sefer of this piece of the Mishnas Yavetz is very widely quoted by later Svarim. It's a relatively recent sefer itself, but the Svarim in the past few decades all refer to this essay, and some agree with it, and some disagree with it. That the Mishnas Yavetz writes, so why is it that we find the halacha of Maos Chitim expressed in Hilchos Pesach as opposed to Yerideya? So he suggests it's because it is a Hilchos Pesach din, that essentially it is a din in Hilchos Yontif. And he says this based on the statement of the Rambam. If you saw, it was on the Mekoros, right? The Rambam, which we referred to in the past, very often quoted position of the Rambam, that the Rambam says that there is a obligation of Simchas Yontif. One has to eat, drink, and be merry on Yontif. But it's also crucially important that what? That you take care of the Aniyim. And if one is going to have a lavish feast on Yontif, and one is going to have all of the delicacies and everything to enjoy the experience, and he's not going to allow the Aniyim to eat, so what's going to happen? So let's read his words. This is in Parag Vav, Halacha Yud Ches. Says the Rambam, "V'kishu ochel v'shoseh, chayiv l'hachil l'ger l'yosom l'almana im shar Aniyim ha'lolim." You have to make sure to take care of all of the needy. "Aval misha noel daltos chatzero," somebody who closes the door of his house. "V'ochel v'shoseh, hu ubana v'ishto." So he and his family, they all eat. And he refuses to give to the aniyim and to those who are sad. That shows you that it's not a simchas mitzvah, but it's a simcha of your belly, basically. So that's not so impressive, and that's not going to accomplish anything, as the Rambam goes on to say. So suggests the Mishnah Yavetz that we see is that din in Simchas Yantif that you have to take care of the poor. So that's why this halacha appears in Hilchos Pesach and not elsewhere. So it is interesting, again, how this this piece, specifically the Mishnah Yavetz, got around a lot. Many later Sfarim talk about it. And there are those who disagree with it for a number of reasons. So what are the implications, first of all, of such a statement in order to disagree? Why would you agree or disagree? And what are the implications? Are you?
It doesn't seem to be specifically for Pesach. It's for any Yom Tov. So it's not
the Rambam statement doesn't seem right. So that's one of the major questions that comes up. So if this is true, so then let it be a statement by Olav Yantif. Which, as we'll get to a little bit later, that's a question that was dealt with both before and after Rizalti. That there are those who, building on Rizalti, ask if he's right, so then why don't we find this by everything? And before Rizalti, the question was also asked, Tom, without going as far as his point, you know, why don't we find such an institution by the Untoldness? That's certainly a kasha that's out there, and his position makes it even more pressing. So what else? So what are the implications of such a position? So one issue.
What if there's no anim at all?
Ah, okay, that's a good one. What if there are no anim? So then maybe you're missing out something. So from the Rambam's formulation, it's an interesting question to explore, that maybe that's not necessarily a problem, because the way he phrases it that if you're going to shut the anim out, that will be a simon that this is not a real Simchas Yantif. But if there are no anim to shut out, then maybe you wouldn't have necessarily a problem. It's an interesting question to explore. But the issue which Rizalti discusses, and there are others who disagree with, is what about anim themselves? Are anim obligated in Matanas Levyot, in Moos Chitin? There's a hint there. So in Moos Chitin. So Rizalti's assumption is that they are obligated in Moos Chitin. And there are those who disagree. So we've mentioned in the past the Sefer Avos Stuck, a relatively recent Sefer, even more recent than Mishnas Yavetz, written by Rav Avram Avidan. And he takes issue with Mishnas Yavetz on this. He thinks it's totally nonsensical to say that a Neim should have this Chiv. Now, any question about that?
Can we have someone who said that if you don't have enough money yourself, there's no sense of giving away stuff.
So we've seen that in a couple of contexts, right? So we've seen that to a certain extent as far as stock is concerned. And we're about to discuss in a second how Matanas Levyonim, which we saw a month ago, how that fits into this. But there are those who say that in both contexts. So that's what the Avos Stuck is saying here. He's saying that it makes no sense to him. He thinks it's totally illogical that the whole point is to help out the Aniyim. So why should we obligate the Aniyim to help out others? That seems to be totally, let's say, circular. And he also notes that it does sound like that from Yor Zeruah, the Yor Zeruah that the Ramah quotes. His language is that everyone should give based on what they are able to afford. And something like Imanehu Yikaba, that if he's an Ani, then he receives. So it sounds like that's the story. You're coming on one side of the equation or the other. So either you're a giver, and we'll figure out how much you can afford to give, or you're a receiver. So that's also a category. So we don't say that everyone has to be on the giving side of the equation. Question about that?
And then we also say that the issue is not necessarily not giving, but the issue is kind of the way you view Aniyim in general. That if you view it as there's no purpose or sense in giving anybody anything, that's the real issue. But you don't actually.
In terms of the general lavin, we said that when it comes to the prohibitions of not giving tzedakah, that those prohibitions are about those who don't give because they don't care about people. So that goes to Aaron's question from a few minutes ago, that how would it reflect on you if there's no Aniyim? So it could be that if there's no Aniyim, maybe this whole issue wouldn't necessarily come up. But this is the other side. What if you are yourself an Aniyim? So are you Chayiv? So here the Mishnas Yavetz is assuming you're Chayiv. And the Avos Stuck is saying that it makes no sense that you shouldn't be Chayiv. And he thinks the Yor Zeruah essentially is pretty much explicit that an Aniyim is not Chayiv. Now, so why would the Mishnas Yavetz disagree and say Ani is Chayiv? So there are two points to consider. So one, if you recall, when it comes to Matanas Levionim a month ago, we spoke about that you really have to really enjoy all the synergies here, how everything comes together. I think it's like the whole Zman has been Marmakomos for the next day. So essentially, when it comes to Matanas Levionim, because you really have to understand that Sugya to understand this Sugya, it all comes together, that when it comes to Matanas Levionim, so we saw that there are those who say that Aniyim are Chayiv. And again, there were those who saw it makes no sense. I mean, that we saw the Pre-Chodesh and Pre-Megadim on this. Those who say that Aniyim absolutely are not Chayavos in this. And there are others who said they are, because there the understanding was that Matanas Levionim is about Simcha, that it's an expression of Simcha to hand out gifts to others, and therefore Aniyim should also be able to partake in it. So here, it's a similar point if you say that Aniyim are Chayavim, but it's a little bit different. Here there's another component that specifically, and this is how Rav Zsolti explains his position, says that if it's about Simchas Yontif, so the Gemara says in Beitza, which if you saw it was on the Makoros, right, that God declares that you should borrow for Yontif and I will pay back. Which you also have to figure out exactly, this draws on our whole discussion of tzedakah and the differences between receiving tzedakah and receiving loans, because in general, so the context of Shabbos, so the Gemara says, "Asei Shabbos v'chol v'al tzedarech lebrios," that you should maintain a lower standard of Shabbos rather than of enjoying Shabbos rather than place yourself on the tzibur. But there seems to be a difference between borrowing and just taking the stock of it. If you hope to pay it back, so then maybe it is worth making that extra stretch. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll meet you also, I'll help you pay back. If this is something that's worth doing, it's worth taking out a little bit of a loan in order to be able to express Simchas Yontif, and I'll help out with that. So that's Rav Zsolti's point, that if it's about Simchas Yontif, so then in order to partake in the Simchas Yontif, it's worth borrowing and making sure you have enough to give to Aniyim also. And the Sefer Avos Tzedakah, when he wants to express his disagreement with Rav Zsolti's position, so he writes that, he says, think about this. Imagine, let's say, you have a person who has at his Seder table, or his Yontif table, he has all the Aniyim in town come over for a meal. Just like the Rambam describes what you should do in Hilchos Yontif. But he doesn't give any Moschit. So, would you say that he's not Makayim Simchos Yontif? So that doesn't really bother me so much. I think that the point Rav Zsolti is making is that the practice of Mosfitim is an outgrowth of what the Rambam writes there. It doesn't mean that, you know, one has to define the other. It doesn't mean that just because the Rambam says Simchas Yontif requires you to host the poor when possible, that if you did that and didn't do Mosfitim, you're not Makayim. No, the Kasha doesn't really bother me that much. But at any rate, this point about whether the Aniyim themselves are Chayavim, this is one of the points that is subject to dispute. It's interesting also that the Avos Tzedakah has a machlokes with others in an interesting way, even though he considers this pashut misvara, but then he acknowledges that others, such as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, disagree. That he says he thinks it's pashut misvara, that, here again, you need all of our past sugyas as Mar Makomos for this point, that one cannot give Mosfitim from his Meiser Ksachim money. Why not? Because we have a principle. Now again, we talked about Meiser Ksachim, so we saw that rules and regulations of Meiser Ksachim are a little hard to fit down, but assuming that, let's say, we treat Meiser Ksachim like Meiser Ani, like it was the real Dimon HaTorah with very set rules of what it can be used for. So in general, the Gemara has a policy that Kol Davar Shebechova Eino Ba Elamen Achuin. That when it comes to an obligation, so that you have to give from your disposable income. You can't give it from Meiser. Meiser has supposed to be above and beyond. So if it's something you're already obligated to do, so then you can't use your Meiser money for that, which is one of the major themes that comes up. If you do treat Meiser stuff in a very halachic way, so this is the major guideline that comes up. So can you use it for your school tuition? Can you use it for things like that? What's considered an obligation? What's not considered an obligation? It becomes important to distinguish between what's considered to be a davar shebechov and what isn't. So there's quite a lot of literature about this. So he assumes that it's Pashim Yisvari, it says that most chitim the davish b'chova. So you can't take from your regular stock of funds in order to give to this, because this is essentially an obligation, and it has to come from the money that's not dedicated to tzedakah otherwise. It's not part of the meiser money, whatever that means. So it's just interesting. He says that's Pashim Yisvari, but he had many svarim, quote, from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that he disagreed with this. But Rav Shlomo Zalman's point was more practical rather than conceptual, that Rav Shlomo Zalman agreed that conceptually maybe this is true. Maker Hadin, that's how we should relate to it. But practically, it's just not how it's treated nowadays. So the whole idea of Moes Chitim, the way it's laid out in the Gemara, in the Yerushalmi, is that it's really like a communal tax. As we've mentioned many times, that the first parak of a Basra type stock is more of the communal institutions, and how residents are required to be supportive of the broader communal needs. So in that context, it really sounds like it's more of a tax. This is a comment that the Nesivus has in his Sefer Makor Chaim. The Nesivus was very, very prolific. He had time to argue with Xos on just about everything he said, and also had time to write many, many other svarim that were not about arguing with Xos. So one of the Xos, we have basically three svarim that we know about, and the Nesivus is probably like 30 svarim, or more. He wrote many, many svarim. So one of his svarim is called the Makor Chaim. So in Makor Chaim, in Hilchos Pesach, he writes that this is to be perceived as a mas, as a communal tax, which then gets into other discussions. It happens to be the Avastaka has an interesting take on that. And the idea of 12 months, so Magen Avraham modifies that, it says nowadays it's 30 days. If you've lived in a town for 30 days, then you are eligible in both directions. But essentially it's a communal imposition, and that's how it should be viewed. So yes, strictly speaking, if that's how it was practiced, so then you're right that Eino Bo'alam and Achulin, and it should not come from Meiser money. But, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's just not how we function nowadays. That nowadays nobody is being assessed by his rabbi or by the town Tuvei or whoever it is. Nobody is getting an official sock on how much most chitim they're obligated to give. Everyone's making their own decisions on how much they're going to give towards this cause. So, practically speaking, it's like a normal sock. So, since that's how it's done, and since we don't have fear on this nowadays, this is our focus in the past few weeks, since we don't have a structure where one is told this is what you got to give or else, so practically speaking, it's like a normal tzedakah, and it can come from Meiser stuff. This is a couple of other interesting discussions that all revolve around this issue of what exactly is the character of this. So we also find the discussion that if you're going to provide matzah, so do you provide the minimal standard of matzah? Or what if the ani who you're giving to has a hashkacha that he follows, or he has a shita about the shmur, or machine, or not machine, or whatever it is, this, that. So are you obligated to provide the standard that they're looking for? Or you say, okay, minimal matzah, that's enough. So here there is a discussion as well in Poskim. It's interesting. Some suggest, so last week Joseph Liebman spoke about the Haggadah. So Joseph Liebman has a sheet about this also. It's a different Joseph Liebman. It's Yosef Liebman, who's the author of the Sefer Mishnas Yosef. So he has a discussion that maybe the whole point is that you want to provide Pesach food. So nowadays, whatever you give, they can trade, they can sell. So it doesn't really matter so much, which is an interesting perspective. And he felt that maybe Matanas Lavyonim or Shalach Manas, let's say Shalach Manas, the whole idea is it really has to be something that's usable at the moment, so that has to really fit whatever Hashgacha the recipient follows. But here, when it comes to matzah, they can take the matzah and they can trade it for other matzah, so he felt that it wasn't such a big deal. But the idea that it should be hider that the recipient would appreciate, so that many assume that that's the case, that it's not just a minimal tzedakah kind of idea, but that it should follow what the recipient is accustomed to. It's interesting, Rav Moshe Sternbuch has a discussion about this in the Sefer Moed HaMuzman in Chelek Zayin, and there he notes that the idea of Hiddur by Tzedaka that you discussed a little bit, that you find Tishminisa requires you to ask for Tzedaka in order to do it. We talked about that. So when it comes to Neres Chanukah, which we spoke about, so we know the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say that one has to ask from Tzedaka in order to perform Ner Chanukah. But the Bir Halacha quotes from the Sefer Chemed Moshe that you only have to ask for Tzedaka for one candle per night, because everything else is the Mahadran, so that's above and beyond, so you don't take from Tzedaka for that, just for the one candle. So Rav Sternbach makes a point, it's an important point. He says he doesn't know why nobody points out that maybe Alfi Halacha, so you're only Mechuyev to ask for one candle, but practically speaking, you have to give him for all the candles, because how could you have, let's say it's the fifth night of Hanukkah, everyone else is lighting five candles, and he's only going to light one candle because he's taking from Tzedaka, so what's going to happen to his dignity? What's going to happen to his kavod? It's going to be a bizayim that he's doing less than everyone else is doing because he's getting from Tzedaka, so clearly the halachas of Tzedaka would require that you go more than that, not else the kiyum mitzvah, but else the needs of Yami, the spirit of our day machzorah consideration. So it would seem here too that not necessarily because of his mitzvah fulfillment, but because of the other more personal elements of Tzedaka, one would have to fit his considerations. But he also goes on to say that as far as Zman Cheruseinu, with the idea that Pesach has a focus on our Cherus, so then it especially seems to be indicated that we should try to fit the standard that one is striving for in general. Cheirus means that you should be free. You're not just living a mitzumtzumtik existence, you're living a comfortable existence. So that's a part of what this Ani needs. He needs to be able to live in such a way. Some say, by the way, that that's the whole point when the Gemara says that you should beg for dalakosos. I think Ravon Farbstein has a discussion about this in the Sefer Knesset Avram, that despite the fact that we say, I say Shabbos V'chol, that it's better you should have a toned-down Shabbos rather than ask for Tzedakah. By Pesach, maybe the whole point is that you still have to look for a cheristic standard above and beyond. Perhaps. Or you could have thought the opposite. The story kind of cuts both ways. You could have said, well, if it's about cheris, then maybe you should think Yadavka shouldn't ask for Tzedakah in such a context. You can see the story both ways. But that's perhaps the point here, that you should try to strive not just for a minimal kind of existence, but an existence that reflects this whole mentality of Cheres. This goes to the point that was asked before, so why is it specifically when it comes to Pesach that we have such an institution? Why shouldn't we say that there should be an obligation like this for all of the regalim? Like I said before, you could ask that specifically to Rav Zolti, who says it's a din and Simchas Yantif. Or you could ask it without Rav Zolti, why do we find this takana specifically for Pesach? So the Zman Cheruseinu point, just interesting parenthetically, is not necessarily so shown here, but it's also just an interesting point to reflect on, that the idea that we have a mentality of Cherus, Pesach night, so this might be something to think about during a Seder, so sometimes people, especially former slaves, so you might think, okay, so we used to be on the bottom, we used to be beat up and enslaved, so now we want to be on top. So, you know, the cheres means, you know, kind of in the relative sense. So we were on the low end of the totem pole, so now we want to be on the top end of the totem pole. And it's all relative. So all that we care about is that we are expressing freedom. But I think we find this theme here and throughout, that it's not about a relative cheres, that, okay, we were on the bottom, now we want to be on the top, that we want freedom. So we want freedom for everyone. Again, we discussed last week what freedom means. Freedom doesn't mean just freedom to do whatever you want, but freedom to maximize your potential. So it's not like we want to be the enslavers now, but we want everyone to have freedom, and so at least, you know, within the poor of the Jewish people. So our freedom is going to be deficient if we're not taking care of everyone else. It's important in general, Shechter quotes in the Def Sharab, one of the Svarim that the Soloveitchik said, that the Pasuk in the Torah, that during the night of Makos Bechoros, the Jews were told to stay in their households. that the concern was, as you sometimes find throughout history, that when you have an oppressed population and then they're all of a sudden liberated, so we're concerned that maybe they're just going to now try to kill everyone else. They're going to just try to flip things around. So that's not the message here. The message is that the Jews should be liberated, and this is the value. So to here we find that it's not only the relative sense that, okay, as long as we're on top, that's all that matters, but that we seek to make sure that others are feeling the cheirus also, otherwise there's something missing in our cheirus. So this is a point that the Mishnah Berurah makes as well, that maybe the idea, it talks about Zman Simchaseinu, that maybe the Takana specifically for Pesach has to do with the fact that there's such a focus on Simcha and Cheirus and the like that it's going to be something missing if we don't share that with others. He also notes, just in a practical sense, that since, as we know, so Pesach, kosher food, is harder to get. Kosher food all year round is easier than a kosher Pesach food. So the Aniyim are going to have a harder time eating on Pesach than any other week of the year. So we could have two bad consequences. Either the Aniyim will go hungry, and that'll be bad, or they'll eat non-kashal Pesach food, and that'll be bad. So therefore, perhaps, we could simply understand that Pesach has this requirement as opposed to any other yontif, because the needs create a little bit of a different landscape. There are those who suggest also an interesting idea that perhaps the notion is that the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that b'Pesach nidonim al ha'tvua, that there are different times of the year when different judgments take place, and on Pesach we are assessed based on our produce, where we are, our produce is assessed. How much food will we have for the year? So maybe specifically at that time when we are under the microscope, so we want to show that whatever resources we have, we use them, l'shem shemayim, that we share them with others. And as has been commented in terms of Staka, you know, that we read in yesterday's Haftorah, that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, test me out with Staka, you see, bring my view as Maestro Seichem of Beis HaOtzer, that the more Staka you bring, this is the one area in which it's appropriate to test God, that God will give you more Staka to give, and that the idea is that we are given resources in this world so that we can use them for the right ends. And if we do a good job, so then we show that we're capable of more responsibilities, so we get more. Like Shechter has used the mashal that they have on the Shulch. So you tell the Shulch he's got to raise money for the yeshiva, and a certain percentage of whatever he raises, he gets to keep. So he realizes that the better job he does, the more he raises for the yeshiva, he'll have a higher percentage. So it's the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give you money, and you're the steward of this money, that you should give it out to the poor. And it's a great deal. You get to keep 90% of it. It's a great deal. So, but the better job you do in your ikar shtichus of giving the money out, so then you're ready for more responsibility, you get more. And again, the same deal, you get to keep 90% of it. Of course, the exact number we discussed a few weeks ago, whatever it is, 90, 80, whatever it is. But the point being that the better job you do, so you're ready for more responsibility, and then you get more. So if that's the case here too, that Pesach, we're saying, okay, we know we're under the microscope, we're going to get a judge on how much food we'll have this year, so we want to make sure that we show that we are good stewards of the food, and we're going to give it out to more people. So that's another suggestion that you find. But it's also interesting, a few other points, the Chachma Shlomo writes in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, that we say, kol dichvin yesev yechol, that we're going to say at the Seder that whoever is hungry should come and eat. So we don't want to look like we're a dover shkarim. We don't want to look like we are liars, like we're saying something that's not true, that's contradicted by our behavior. So presumably what he means is it's not just a technicality. Oh, we want to make sure that it doesn't look like there's a contradiction between what we say and we do, so we have to check that box. Presumably it's more than that. He's saying that in the experience of Kol Dichvin, when we say that, when we say Halach Ma'anya, that there is a certain theme of the Seder that's being expressed. And some Svarim make this point, that there is a beautiful, beautiful Sefer that Ruf Rolsham, or the Rashi Yeshiva in Lakewood, has on he has on Hanukkah and Pesach, as far as I know, just those two volumes, maybe there's more beautiful Svarim on those Yom Tovim, called Yareach Moadim. So in that Sefer in Pesach, he has a beautiful essay about the idea that Pesach is a yontif of chesed. And that, it says, based on the Torah quotes his brother, is saying that all the three regalim are patterned after different avos, and that Pesach is patterned after Avram. So Avram is the Omer HaChesed, so Pesach is also the day of Chesed. So the Avos Chesed, the Chavetz Chaim, the Sefer Avos Chesed, so he explains this idea by noting the Tana de Be'el Yom, fascinating point, that relates that during the time of the Galus, during the time of the Shibud, so the Jews made a bris with each other. And they basically said, you know, this is very evocative of stories that you hear about the Holocaust. And they said that we realize we're in dire straits and that things are very bad. So we're making a deal with each other that we're all going to look out for each other, that we're all there for one another, and that whatever we have, we're going to share. We're going to make sure to engage in chesed, even if we have very little. Even if there isn't so much to go around, we'll make sure that we share. So on that schus, because of that, that's why they were ultimately redeemed. That they held on to this midah of Avraham Avinu and this bris of chesed. And because of that, so ultimately things worked out, they were able to continue in his path. And to continue to build the Jewish nation. So as Rav Alshin and others have a similar mahal, as they note, so that's maybe the idea that we say to say tonight, Halach ma'anya de'achalu abasana. This poor bread that our forefathers ate, what does it mean? It means the matzah? But it means that when they were in the Shibud, so they ate very little, because they had to hold back, because whatever they had to share with everyone else, because they were all looking out for each other. So because of that, that's the mentality that led to their being redeemed then. So we hold on to that. We say, "Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol." Everyone who eats should come and eat. And the question is always asked, well, that's great, you're inviting them now, so it's already the middle of the Seder, and the door's closed, so no one's going to hear you. So what exactly is the meaning? So the point is, it's not necessarily that you're inviting people to the Seder now. The point is that your mentality all year round of kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, that's the extension of the idea of halach ma'anya de'achalu avasana. And that's what's going to be the cause also of Lashon Haba Yerushalayim. That the idea that there'll be a future Geula, that's because we're holding on to this practice of our ancestors in Mitzrayim. I think it's a beautiful idea. So if that's the case, so you find specifically within Pesach that this was the Hanhaga that kept us going. And therefore it makes, I saw a recent Sefer makes a similar point, that's the idea that we have a takana of Maos Chitim, that it should be built into the day. So all of these points could explain a little bit more why there is a more focused obligation specifically on Pesach, again, with or without the resulting point. But there is a remez that they quote from the Vilna Gaon. Many Sfarim quote this. And like we just said from the Chachma Shlomo, let's assume it's more than just a few points, but it has a little bit more of a fundamental message in it as well. That in Parshas Bo, in Perek Yud Gimel, so Pasuk Vav, the Pasuk says, Vav and Zayin, the Pesukim read, Shivas Yomim Tochal Matzos, Uvyom HaShvi'i Chag LaHashav. Right, so you got to eat matzah 7 days. What does the next Pasuk say? Matzos ye ochel eis shivas hayamim v'lo yeira l'cha chameitz v'lo yeira l'cha tzor v'chol gvulach. So once again, you got to eat matzah for 7 days. So that's pretty repetitive. So a second ago it says eat matzah 7 days, and then the very next pasuk, once again, matzah should be eaten 7 days. So said the Vilna Gaon that maybe this is a remez to this idea that the first pasuk is telling us we should eat matzah, and the next pasuk is telling us we should make sure matzah should be eaten, meaning what? That we should make sure that everyone else has matzah too. That it's not just that we have our matzah, but that those who may not have access to matzah, so we have an obligation to provide that. So, again, you could take that as a remez, or you could say that maybe the Vilna Gaon is saying that that's a part of the mitzvah of matzah, as the Torah is presenting. That unlike, perhaps, other obligations, So the mitzvah is, by its very nature, a mitzvah that requires you to not just do it yourself, but have others involved as well. Now, parenthetically, I think we spoke about this a little bit last year, but maybe 2 years ago, I remember, but probably last year we were talking about Hanukkah, that you could say, in general, that that's also the idea of Pirsumei Nisa, that which we find in the context of Dalakosos, which may also be related, that when we say that you have to go begging for Pirsumei Nisa, so the real focus is, the whole mucker for the Rambam's idea that you have to go begging for Pirsumei Nisa is really a Mishnah, there, the Mishnah in Pesachim about Dalakosos, Afilo Ani Halokeach Menatamachoy Lo Yivchas Lo Midalakosos Shol Yayin. So as some point out, asking on this, that the Mishnah doesn't say the Ani has to ask. The Mishnah says that the Tamkoi has to provide, that when you're deciding what you're going to give, so you have to make sure to give for Dalakosos as well. So it could be that the whole point of the Pirsumei Nisa is not so much that you have to go crazy in order to be able to do it. It's that the whole nature is that it's not just something you do yourself. You make sure that as many other people as possible could do it. So it makes sense that when you're lighting Hanukkah candles, you're also going to worry about the consideration that everyone else should be able to light Hanukkah candles. Maybe it's different than a mitzvah like a lulav, which doesn't inherently have a requirement that you also worry about others. So this also connects to our kfiyah point, right? The whole question of when a mitzvah requires you to be involved with somebody else's business and when it doesn't. So maybe here specifically, when there is a Pirsumei Nisa component, then it by its very nature requires you to try to help as many people as possible perform the mitzvah. And maybe the pasuk is telling us that matzah has the same concept. So if that's the idea, so then that could also explain most sweetim. Again, I don't know how far the Bomadon would have wanted to go with this remnant, but maybe it's more fundamental to hold in that that's essentially what's happening. That's a part of the mitzvah of matzah. So essentially, what does that leave us with? That leaves us with basically at least three different perspectives on what most chitim is about. Now, one could say it's a general din and staka, just addressed, focused towards the Pesach realities, but it's the same kind of thing we have all year round. As we saw, some of the svarim were tending towards assuming that way. Rav Schulte's perspective that focuses on Simchas Yontif, but then makes it sound like it really should equally apply to all the regalim. And what we're saying here about it being in matzah specifically, that matzah requires you taking care of everyone else, which is not a din staka, is a din yontif, but specifically in Pesach. And if so, that could also explain, as others know, the point that we started with, that why is it that the Rama makes his comment about Ma'asitim connected to Sholom Adosh and Behotas HaPesach. So there are those who point out, the Chiddush Harim points out, that the whole thrust of what the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that when it comes to the time of the zone, and we spoke about it, I guess it was last week, that when it comes to the zone of 30 days, so the chiyuvim of the chag kick in. So since this is a chiyuv of the chag, so now you have to start worrying about it because the mitzvot of Pesach are now already in action. So perhaps the most pressing mitzvah is to start worrying, how am I going to make sure that all the aniyim are also taken care of and that they are going to have their needs addressed? That's a chelek of the din. I think the Chiddush Shehrin also makes the comment, just that also for synergy, back to our sugi about kofen ala mitzvos. So either he makes the point, or others who quote him make this point, that, so we raised the question, we quoted the Sharmat Siyan and Bahalach, a difficulty with this point, if you remember, when the Gemara says that sukkah eini osa, that a person says he's not going to make a sukkah, so kofen oso atshir merotzani, or atshir he takes the asnapshul. So the question was asked, well, the mitzvah of building a sukkah is not really a mitzvah, it's of eating in the sukkah. So when does this come up? It's only going to come up Pesach night itself. And then is that when Bezdin is functioning? If you remember, we talked about that question. So some want to say, maybe the Chishrim himself says this, that the whole point is that 30 days before the chiyuvim of the yontif kick in, and therefore you're going to need to have a sukkah. So if somebody, just for practical reasons, to be able to fulfill the actual mitzvah of the yeshiva of a sukkah, so somebody who says, during this month, and 30 days before sukkah, so I'm not interested, I refuse to make any arrangements for a sukkah, so then it's already relevant to start being kofen. So in that sense also, so 30 days before Pesach, so you have to make sure everything's taken care of. And this is a component of it. So now, if we put this in the context of what we've been saying the whole Zman in terms of the chiyuvim of tzedakah, that there is the personal chiyuv of Maseches Ksubis, the Parshas Re'eh, and the like, and there is the communal chiyuv of the first parak of Bava Basra. So then you could say a little bit further, and you could say, so most chitim we see in Rishonim is a Bava Basra the Gedin. It's a din which some understand as a kind of a mass. And that maybe that's also the understanding that when it comes to the mitzvah of matzah, the chiddush is that matzah is not only a personal mitzvah, but there is a component of matzah that is on the tzibur as a whole. And that's what got us through the initial goal, is the fact that we took care of each other. So too, the kpeda, to worry about everybody else, that becomes a communal chiyuv of matzah. That's matzos ye'achel es shiva sayamim. And most chitim takes on now a mavasra din, not a ksubas din, that we have a tzibur focus to worry about everyone else and to fulfill matzah as a communal entity. So I'll just mention one more point to close this, and then we'll review and then we'll dive in. So in the Sefer Moedim Simcha, it's a beautiful Sefer, he talks about in great detail. It's a big Sefer, but he always talks every yantar into a few things. And he talks in great arichas about whatever inyanim he focuses on, sometimes the more minig-oriented. So he talks, I think it was also published by Otzer HaPoskim, we mentioned that that institution a few days ago. So in the Moed in the Silcha, so he has a big essay, Kedarko on Moed Schitin, and then in the end he has eight reasons, nine reasons, why it might be that Moed Schitin is distinct for Pesach as opposed to the other regalim. So I think he has like a list of eight reasons there. And then he has a ninth reason. He says a little bit of a joke. He says a little bit of a non-serious reason. He says, maybe the answer to the kasha of why don't we have this by Yodhi Yom Tovin, maybe the answer is there is no good answer. It should be by Yodhi Yom Tovin. It's a good question, and that should be the practice. So that could be the case also. But maybe the point is that Pesach is really the beginning of the regalim. We count from Nisan. So the notion is that, yes, really, this should be our attitude by every yanti. But dafka by Pesach, so we have it established as a function of Pesach, because this will set the tone for the whole calendar, and it will set the tone for the beginning of the Jewish people. That's where the whole Yontif is focused. And then we'll understand that, yeah, all year round we have Chiyuvim of Stakeh, and the Regalim also we should be particularly sensitive as a recognition of what's involved, but the institution specifically is associated with Pesach, and that's what most Chitim represents. Okay, any questions about that? All right, so let's just quickly review, and then we'll dive in. So we spoke about the question of the minig of Moed Schitin, as the Rama puts it, which he attaches to the idea of Shol Medarshan, and some comment that this is the Iker Drasha, the Shabbos Shubah Drasha that the Rabbi should be speaking about, Shabbos Shkagel Drasha, rather than Shabbos the Rabbi should be talking about, make sure that the Aniyim are taken care of. And the idea that he calls it a minig is a little surprising, because in the Yerushalmi it seems like it's a din in Staka, Yud Beis Chodesh, Lechit Pesach, Beliso Belite. So the Mishnah Berura says that the Rama, who's quoting the Ruah, said it's a minig because it's talking about the fact that in his day they were giving chitim, and the Gemara was talking about giving cash, and nowadays we're back to cash, but the idea is always to try to give whatever is most helpful, so that's the minig that's reflected there. And he talks there also about the shir, that whatever is needed in order to get him through Yontif, and if he doesn't know how to turn it into a matzah, then making sure that could help, that could happen, is also a part of the obligation. And then we talked about why it is that we don't just say day machsoro, and that should tell us look for your day, and that will suffice. So the Chida has this comment that maybe people wouldn't take from Staka, so there had to be a special takana. And Rav Zalti had his very widely quoted observation that maybe this is a reflection of the Rambam's comments by Hilchos Staka, that by Hilchos Yontif rather, that if you don't have the aniyim taken care of at your table, so then your Simchos Yontif doesn't count. And then the question was, there were those who disagreed with him, what's the implication of that, and what's the whole basis for it? So one of the implications, he says, is that therefore aniyim are also chayiv. Sefer Avos Staka disagreed with this and thought it didn't make sense, and also that the Ramaz or the Ruah seems like he's explicitly saying that the aniyim are the receivers rather than the givers. So we discussed that you could understand this if you compare it, first of all, from Matanos Lev Yonim. So we saw a similar idea that if it's about Simcha, so then Aniyim should be Chayiv as well. And we saw there, as Menachem pointed out, that it was controversial there also, and by Tzedakah, the whole question is a question. But maybe here there's additional reason to say that the Yonim should be Chayiv, and especially if you say that it's Simcha's Yontif. So the Gemara says in Beitza that it's worth borrowing for the purposes of Simcha's Yontif, and that maybe that should extend here as well. And then we discussed also the question of whether you could give from Meiser money for Mos Chitim. The Abbas Saka thought it was Pashut that you cannot, although we acknowledge that the Rosh Hashanah Zalman says that you can. And the issue is more a practical one, that conceptually it seems like it's a tax for those, as the Nesivus points out, in Mekor Chayim, for people who are living there 12 months. Magen Avraham says nowadays 1 month. But it's a communal tax, so if it was really treated as a tax, we'd say it shouldn't come from Meiser. But since nowadays everybody gives based on what they feel like they want to do, so therefore it's now appropriate to give it from Meiser money. You don't have to have such a limitation. And then we talked about the question of whether it should be just basic or should be for a hinder. Most assume that we want to try to fulfill all of the standards, although it doesn't necessarily have to be the actual matzah you're giving them. We quoted Yosef Liebman to that extent, not the senator, but the posek. And then we talked about Sternbach's point that when we say you only have to ask for tzedakah for one candle for Hanukkah, but practically speaking, as far as tzedakah is concerned, it's clear to him you have to give more, because how could somebody light less than everyone else just because he's taking from tzedakah? That would be an affront to his dignity, and so to here, and especially because Cheiris is involved. So we discussed along those lines some additional reasons why it should be that Pesach might be the focus. And we saw that it has a component of Cheiris, and Mishnah Berurah also focuses on the Simcha, also focuses on the fact that people don't have so much kosher food to eat for Pesach, so we have to worry about that. And of all its implications, there are those who say it's because Pesach nidonin al tefuah, so we want to make sure that we're in the best position to get a good judgment on that. And the Chachma Shlomo says that it's because we don't want to look like we're lying when we say, kol dech v'yeseh v'yechol. So we said it's not just that you don't look like you're lying, but that this statement is a very crucial one for the Seder. And we mentioned the Torah, quoting his brother, that it was a krisos bris at the time of the Gullus, that everyone's going to take care of each other. And Avos Chesed explains that the Torah says actually that the Pesach is based on Avraham Avinu, the Amun Chesed, and the Avos Chesed, the Chavetz Chaim, connects it to that idea of the Tanakh of Elio, that we took a bris to take care of each other. And that's what we're saying, that Halach Ma'ani Adachalu Avasana, we're talking about the fact that they had to skimp, and they had to eat very little during the Shibud so that they could take care of each other, but that's why they were redeemed. And so now also we maintain throughout the year the attitude of Kol Dech V'Nyesu V'Yechol, and that's why we'll be able to say that the Shana Haba Yerushalayim, because we will be worthy of future gulas because of that attitude. So it makes sense that Pesach specifically has this embedded into its character. And then we saw the Graz Remez from the Pasuk of Matzos Yachel, after already telling us that we have to eat matzah, so matzah should be eaten. That's a Remez, the idea that we have to worry about everyone else's matzah. And then we noted that maybe it's really a fundamental concept, just like you find by Pesachim and Nisim, mitzvahs, that it's not just that you should do it, but you should make sure as many people as possible do it. So maybe matzah inherently has such an idea that we should make sure that many people do it, and therefore that's what Mos Chitim represents. And if that's the case also, so then it transforms a personal chiyuv into a communal chiyuv. Maybe that's the whole idea, and that's why it ends up in Bava Basra as well. So we saw that there were a couple of different ways then to see this, either as a chiyuv, as a tzedakah obligation, or as a yontif obligation, or specifically as a Pesach obligation, and now as a Pesach communal obligation, that maybe all of that is essentially what Mos Chitim represents. And then we just mentioned that the ninth answer in the Modim Simcha as to why it's specifically by Pesach is that maybe there's no good answer, maybe it should be by every yontif. So in Achanami, maybe it should be by every yontif, but maybe Pesach sets the tone as the first of the regalim from Nisan, and the first in our history of the Jewish people, and that should be our mentality all year round, but it's particularly associated with Pesach for a number of reasons that we've seen, and that to the extent that we're able to incorporate that mentality, we should only be zeicha to even greater redemption in the future. So we'll now be a somech geulah lefila, and then we'll dad mincha. Ashrei yoshev etzach.